Blog Talk Radio.
Call. Press star at any time to listen to advanced options. Please enter the number you wish to call. Press star at any time to listen to advanced options.
Pong, are you there? Okay. We have a little technical problem.
Please call again later. Goodbye.
Okay. I seem to be having a problem or a technical situation here. What we shall do is we will try to reconnect Ponga as we try to work out things. Everybody, thanks for calling in. But where Zebron and Alan, I am still trying to call or connect Ponga here. We seem to have a little bit of a technical problem as we try to go back to South Africa where he is best. Let's just try to listen to a bit of music as we do that. I don't know if my colleague Roger is in to try and help me with the situation here, but everybody, please stand by. Just give us a few minutes as we try to reconnect Ponga.
Nalema kulila misozi, nikayanga na bandalatu. Kupadwa tinabadwa mushe, koma lelo lipazulika. Nikale, tinakalapo, kondwela. Lelo heka, tutikumbukila kweta chokela. mutima koma zoti tazisoa nimaona misozi masomo yake ni mavuto abale ni mavuto. Kumwanako kuipirendi kuchitoko na mumufolo hama hama inei jiziwanda zota nizi taeza talema na yo mapempelo atika pena siku lina azati kumbukila oye chifu kwa lelo bantu bonse basoweza ulemu atate imwe kale osangalala tuva ingatoki talema na pepo kapena mbale wanga azazi wakuti akula azazi otawa mavuto alimumanja mwake kapena zaziva kuti afuniko limba chifukwa ni mwamuna afuniko kuti kila banja kuti ni bambo wa nyumba elo asataye wana siunga ziwe aza kutunga kusogoro oh oh.
Please enter the number you wish to call. Press star at any time to listen to advanced options.
Hi, everyone. We seem to be having a technical problem here with Tonga. We shall keep trying, but good morning, Zebra, good morning.
Good morning, Nathan.
Okay. I called him. We went through, and we seem to be having a challenge here. We shall see how we can do this. We are ready to go with the discussion, but for some reason, it seems to be a challenge here. Zebron, your thoughts on this FIFA situation? What are your thoughts here? Zebron, are you there?
I was on mute.
I was
just reading about it. Of course, you know that the US has cleaned up the FIFA organization and finally Sepp Blatter is resigning. You know, I was just thinking about it the other day, you know, like, you know, there's so much corruption, maybe so much corruption in FIFA, and Sepp Blatter may be leaving, you know, but I was just telling my other guys that I don't think there'll be any other president of FIFA who had a heart for African football except Blatter. You know, we may not like him. He may be corrupted and everything. But as we know, corruption is everywhere. And despite all the corruption going on in Europe and people giving deals to each other, at least Sepp Blatter had a heart for Africa and Asia. At least he had a heart for people that needed some service. So he put up a lot of structures. In Zambia, he opened the first house. In Chad, Chad doesn't even participate in any kind of soccer. He put up some technical areas there, technical centers, some nice football grounds. He helped them build the headquarters and all kinds of stuff. So, of course, in Africa, he was the first one to help have South Africa have the first World Cup. You know, if Sepp Blatter leaves, we don't even know if we ever have another World Cup again in Africa. So at least Africa loves Sepp Blatter, you know, and even during the elections, all the 54 votes from Africa went to Sepp Blatter, and the majority in Asia went to Sepp Blatter because he reached out to these small countries that didn't have enough, and he was there. He was there in Africa. He visited all these small countries. He didn't just sit in the office and make calls and something. So we may not like Sepp Blatter. He may have been there for a long time, or he may be corrupted or something, but he's one person that Africa will miss once he leaves because we don't even know how the next president will be, how he's going to, you know, all this corruption, how he's going to behave, because he's going to be very careful on how he makes deals, of course. But at least Sepp Blatter had a heart for Africa as a continent. And once he leaves, I'm sure Africa will miss him a lot. That's my take.
Now, when you say he put up third house, what do you mean? What do you mean by that, Zebra? Zebra?
Fuzz House, you know that Fuzz House
yes.
almost costed.
No, what
up.
I'm saying
yeah.
is when you say he put up Fuzz House, what do you mean? Did he like, you
yeah,
know?
I mean, he helped with the funds because the funds came from FIFA to put
mm-hmm.
up the Fuzz House. They came from FIFA, so and it was about half a million dollars. There's about $500,000 by then. So, because FIFA has some funds, some grants, like a development kind of a project fund that, you know, in another organization, those funds may just be sitting over there. But Blatter made sure that those funds went to places that really need them most. And the funds for Fight House come from FIFA. They didn't come from the Zambian government. So, I remember I was in Africa way back. When he came there, you know, they constructed the first house. Yeah, I didn't know. If you guys know where the first house is, it's at least in Kata Road.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Yes.
The,
okay.
Yeah.
Roger, I was asking Zebron here when he says the Blatter did a lot for Zambia and the aspect of him helping us, what do you call it, he putting up a third house and what really that means.
Well, this whole idea of how Blatter helped the third world countries, to some extent, in my view, this is how he corrupted the whole system. He used the weaker nations, those who are, so to say, poverty-stricken countries who do anything for money. So whether we should see this money or this funding as a Robin Hood, somebody said last week, where he was getting money from richer countries to help Africa, that was his only motivation to help Africa. But then later on, we see him taking now advantage of the system, having corrupted them, so to say. To this extent, he begins now to use them to do anything he wanted them to do. The question we are asking is, how does the entire European delegation, Europe, the entire Europe, where they love soccer, where they know everything, who are independent, so to say, vote against him, and only weaker countries who depended on him voted for him? How come there were so much on different pages? So to me, this is what it comes to. And this is how we find our football associations in Zambia, the way they have behaved. They've started to behave, whether it is in Zambia, whether it is in Ghana. For a government cannot even say anything to any football association, or they'll be answering to Blatter about being sanctioned, being from FIFA, and they ran away. So this man, yes, he may have some good, but at the end of the day, as you stay too long in any organization, in any aspect, power begins to corrupt. And indeed, this is what we see happening. Okay. Alan, I don't know what is your take on this issue.
I think this issue is for me, I likened it to an onion, and when you are peeling it with one leaf, one layer after the other, there's more to it than meets the eye, you know. But you know, as far as the African countries, I think we can't really squarely put blame on the African countries for supporting somebody that has helped you out, because at the end of the day, it's the same way politics work in Zambia. It's or anywhere, most of Africa. The person that is feeding you is the person that you are going to support, because when you are hungry, you really don't care where your food is going from. It's a question of, if I don't eat, I die. So you don't care who's giving you the help when you are starving. Now, in our countries in the Western, our friends who have the luxury of saying, I don't need your money, I can go get my own money, they begin tend to look things and at issues from a different perspective. So my issue was that, why is it that the European countries and all those that knew of all these corruptions did not lobby the African countries and say, listen, this man is actually bad for you. This is what he's doing. You can get this without him. Get this support from A, B, C, D, and let's stay away from him. You don't want to be entangled with this guy because he's a cancer.
Yeah. How do you, what is your response about this situation to say, this is North America or America and its allies versus the rest of the world? Alan, how do you look at it?
There is a pinch of truth in that. Anytime America gets involved in anything, they want to take control. Now, if they are the ones who are putting in the most of the money, they have every right to change to want to change things, you know. But if they are not, then it becomes different, you know. You know, remember when America came in, they wanted to say, no, this soccer is too slow. Let's have a no backcourt or half-court situation like they have in basketball, where you can't, once the ball crosses the line, you can't take it all the way back, you know. And people just, you know, that was kind of shut down, but that discussion was there, trying to make soccer a little more, for them, they wanted more goals and things like that. But you see, the question becomes, first of all, you listen to what they are saying.
Brother Alan, sorry, yes, we have a Ponga on the line. We have run out of time.
Okay, thank you, Roger. Ponga, thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Apologies about that technical problem. As we know, Ponga is not a stranger to the Zambian community and soccer world for that matter. He's a renowned football commentator, analyst, and sports media consultant. He has written a book entitled The Zambian Game, 4 Decades of Football. It's available on Amazon or any online places where they sell books. Ponga, let me begin by asking you, what changed between the FIFA General Council, which elected or gave Blatter a fifth term of office, and the day he announced his resignation? What changed?
Yes, I think we started to to start to gather more and more information about some of the goings on in FIFA. Obviously, Sepp Blatter was under a lot of pressure from the day the FIFA Executive Committee members and others were arrested at the Borlak Hotel in Zurich.
Mm-hmm.
And thereafter, we started to hear about the involvement of the South African 2010 World Cup. We started to hear again about more and more happenings in the game of football. And I think we realized at that point that his position was becoming untenable. And then he probably realized that the best course of action, and of course it was mentioned that this was just the tip of the iceberg, more information would be coming out. I think he saw that was too much distraction from what he wanted to do for the rest of his term, and all the focus had now shifted to the unsavory happenings at FIFA, and I think he saw that going forward, probably the best course of action would be for him to step aside.
He wasted a lot of people's time and resources, to say the least. Do you see the seven officials being extradited from whichever countries they are?
Yes, I think we all know that the FBI, when they put a case together, will be thorough in their investigations, will leave no stone unturned. And of course, once they make the move to arrest such high-profile people, it's obviously a case in point that they have all their facts together. It's obvious that they've done their homework. This investigation has been running for many years. I think we are going to see in the shorter term and in the longer term more people being brought into the picture, more people, as the revelations are coming out, will be facing the legal authorities and will be needed to explain their involvement in some of these transactions. But, I mean, when you look back, football has carried on for a long time without the levels of governance that you would expect in an industry that is a multi-billion dollar industry. And I think a lot of people have taken advantage in the laxity from FIFA all the way down to national associations, and they've been able to get their hands on money that was not necessarily theirs or that should have gone into the game.
Mm. Wow. 209 members for Ponga divided into two camps, Europe minus Spain and Russia, and North America versus the rest of the world. That's basically the way they voted at that council. Did that speak anything to what was going on in FIFA and the football world, in your opinion?
Yes, I think you have to go as far back as 1974 to when Yao Avalanche was elected president of FIFA, and he beat Sir Stanley Rout, the late Sir Stanley Rout, an Englishman. And Avalanche's strategy when he came into power in 74 was to grant more places to Africa to go out and actively seek the votes of the developing countries. So it's exactly the same approach that Sepp Blatter used in 1998 when he took on Lennart Johansson. So the fact that from as far back as 1974, FIFA officials have been quoting the developing continents, Africa obviously with a large number of members, has been one area where they realized that they could take the power of running football from Europe and switch it into their own hands. So Havelange was FIFA president until 1998, from 1974, and Blatter used exactly the same strategy. If you recall that far back, the current president, Issa Hayatou, had pledged to, in 1998, when Johansson was on the ballot with Sepp Blatter, Africa had pledged to support Europe, but Blatter rallied a few lieutenants to travel around the African continent, and they were able to rally about half the vote. They were able to take half the vote, and that was what made the difference, and that put Blatter in office. And once he came into office, he then realized that for him to stay on and on, he would need the African vote. And this was when we saw projects such as the Gold Project, in which FIFA pumped money into millions into Africa and other developing countries. And this ensured that the vote from the developing world would largely stay with Sepp Blatter.
Do you think the essence or the aspect of this FIFA presidency not having a limit on its term has affected, in a way, Konga with the things that have gone on in FIFA over years? Because even the other guy whom Blatter took from, he was in that position for a long time. How do you look at that? Why don't they put a limit on the term of office?
Yes, I think the, unfortunately, the trend in football is that once you get once you hold the reins of power, you want to stay there as long as possible. And if you look at the situation in the Confederation of African Football, it's a similar situation where Issa Hayatou has been president of the association, CAF, since 1988. So the tendency is that people, once they get their grip on the game, find themselves in situations where they are able to walk into any country and meet the heads of state. They are treated like heads of state. They find that the lurings of power are so generous to them that nobody wants to walk away from football. And you find that when you go further down the scale from FIFA, which is the world body, to CAF, which is the African body, to the national associations, people find themselves fighting for these offices because they know it means staying in first-class hotels, it means huge allowances, it means traveling, it means going to the World Cup free of charge, going to the Under-20 World Cup free of charge, all sorts of luxuries and enjoyments, and it means power, which they don't normally get. If you look at a country like Kenya, for example, the National Association position has been used as a stepping stone for political office for so many years. Anybody who goes into the football seats uses that to raise their profile and then move on to bigger things. So that's what's been happening in Africa. And the trend starts from the top. So
yes,
if Blatter walks into any country, he's treated bigger than some heads of state. And that power tends to get to people. You've got access to money without the normal levels of corporate governance and transparency, and nobody asks too many questions. So once people get there, nobody wants to walk away from it.
We are talking to Ponga Liwewe, football commentator, analyst, and sports media. He has written a book entitled The Zambian Game, Four Decades of Football. You can find it on Amazon or any other outlets for those in South Africa, Zambia, and Europe listening to us. You can get Ponga's book from the bookstore or online where we normally buy books. So those that have called in, if you'd like to ask a question to Ponga concerning what is going on in FIFA and Sepp Blatter, please press 1 on your phone keypad so that I know that you have a question to ask. We'd like to make use of our time with Ponga. We've already lost a bit of it due to technicalities and all these things. Well, the article that I forwarded to you, Ponga, is alleging that the past 2 or 3 World Cups have been held in the BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. They are saying the last World Cup, the other World Cup was in South Africa, then it went to Brazil, and the Western countries are not happy about that. Does that hold water?
Well, I think the thing they are more not happy about is the way the whole process of voting and selection is happening, the way there are external forces in that voting process. Because maybe I should just explain to the listeners the way the voting goes is that there are 24 members of the FIFA executive, and those 24 members are the ones who sit down and vote for which country will host the World Cup. So when you've got 3 or 4 countries bidding, you have all of those 3 or 4 countries inviting members of those executives to come to their countries. You have delegates from the countries who are bidding going to meet those executive committee members. And unfortunately, over the years, there have been it has become something that is influenced by money, because obviously every country that wants to host the World Cup knows that billions will flow into their coffers. They know that 500,000, 600,000, 800,000 visitors will come to their country, which obviously has economic benefits. And so everybody wants to host the World Cup, in effect. And these 24 executive committee members who are fated like kings, who are offered so many presents and the amount of money. Unfortunately, some people, you know, fail to resist the huge amounts that are offered to them. I mean, we've been hearing figures of some African Executive Committee members getting $1.5 million to vote for Qatar. So those are the amount of money we talk about when it comes to bidding. And unfortunately, some people are unable to turn down those huge amounts. And so you find that the countries who sometimes are willing to go beyond the normal voting process by adding extras for the executive committee members are the ones who prevail. And this culture, unfortunately, has been running throughout football for too long. It influences the votes. Some people will say, but how could Qatar get the right to host the World Cup when the temperatures are 50 degrees? At the time Qatar was voted, nobody was talking about a Winter World Cup. It was expected that the World Cup would be in the height of their summer, which temperatures reached 48, 59, 50 degrees, even during the day. We recently had a heat wave in India that killed over 2,000 people at 48 degrees. So how do you expect people to play football in that kind of environment? So there's been a lot of question marks about how the Qataris got this World Cup. And I think the European countries feel that, look, we come there, we stake our claim, but as long as other countries are not playing the game the way it should be, you know, they cannot win it. And it's also a factor that really aroused the ire of Europe and some of the other continents. The bigger thing was that the corruption, the exchange of money,
before we take,
people, you know, voting people going openly to ask for gifts, ask for money, was really what raised all this pressure on the security forces to move in and to investigate.
Oh, wow. Ponga, before we take some questions from the callers, what would it take to reverse, like, let's say, the Qatar hosting the World Cup? What would it take? What's the process? What's the procedure?
Well, I think the first stage would be if any impropriety is discovered, in the way either Russia or Qatar were awarded the World Cup, it would really be up to the governing body, which is FIFA, to state that the process would have to be rerun. But as we know, there is currently turmoil in FIFA with the resignation of Sepp Blatter. Any new person who will be appointed will only come in the new year, because obviously there are certain processes that need to be undertaken for an emergency conference to be held or an extraordinary AGM to be held. So Blatter will still stay in the seat for a while. So it's really difficult to say what's going to happen. We have to wait and see whether Blatter will be able to stay on, whether he will voluntarily step aside and an interim person will be put in. So those are some of the dynamics that may happen over the next couple of weeks or the next month or so. So it's really difficult to say. But if there is any impropriety, it will have to go to the possibility of new countries being awarded.
Okay. We're talking to Ponga Liwewe, those that have called in. Let's go to the phone lines and take some questions here. Florida, Alan, please go ahead.
Yes. Good afternoon there, or good evening there. Ponga, obviously, you are a household name. We all know you, though you don't know us, but it's good to speak to you. Now, my question is there a correlation between the happenings at FIFA and then now the news with our FAS president? Because obviously there were those stories that we heard about Qatar and him. So should we be preparing ourselves to hear things trickling down to local level, the national levels of our association? And will that affect football in any way?
Yes, I think Qatar features quite prominently in this whole matter. The South African 2010 World Cup is also another prominent area. And there were those revelations that, there was some exchange of funds between the Zambian FA president and Mohammed bin Hammam, who was one of, at the time, who was a candidate for the FIFA presidency against Blatter. Those investigations are still ongoing, I think. So at this point in time, we haven't been given full details, but that was an investigation carried out by the Sunday Times newspaper. That's the Sunday Times of the UK. Their inside team dug deeply into these revelations and produced all these revelations. So I think there's still a lot of activity to happen before we get to that stage. But when you look at the fact that Mohammed bin Hammam was a candidate for the presidency of FIFA, and it's well known that he has since been banned for life for dishing out money and bribing people left, right, and center, it's still very, very clear that there are going to be a lot of casualties. But at this point in time, the investigations are still only at newspaper level. But once the security agencies or the investigative agencies come into it, we may hear some revelations that will be surprising.
Thank you, Alan. Let's go to New York. Cletus, go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you, Nathan. Ponga, your analysis is so wide and so broad, and you know, you have given us an insight of something that was missing, and your information is what a lot of people should hear. Now, my question is a little bit different. Thank you. I just want you to, you know, to say something about why, you know, soccer or football is not modernizing. You know, I'll give you an example where, you know, somebody scores and the referee doesn't see the ball cross the line and bounces back, and they don't want to use the modern technology to make sure that was a score, you know? It looks so foolish afterwards when you watch and you see, like, the person was denied a clear goal. Or sometimes, you know, the person awards the penalty and it was not supposed to be a penalty, it was just a freak, and his eyes or the linesman didn't see that. So why is FIFA resistant to modernizing, you know, using the modern technology to make sure, you know, everything is fair?
Yes, I think when you look at the Hawkeye technology that is used and some of the other modern systems that are used to identify electronically and digitally whether the ball crossed the line or not, I think football has been very late in introducing these technologies, because if you watch the game of cricket, they've been doing this now for probably over a decade or a little bit less. It's the same with tennis. They were quick to jump on and use the technology. FIFA was reluctant because, according to Sepp Blatter, he believed that, you know, the whole decision-making, human error side of it was all part of the game. But if you look at the Brazil 2014 World Cup, the technology was introduced, and we had goal line technology. It's also introduced in the English Premiership and some of the leagues across Europe, but it's not in the UEFA Champions League. So I think we are seeing the first stages of introduction with some of these tournaments that have started to use the technology. And I think generally that's the way, the general direction it will go at the end of the day. But some people say, look, not everybody can afford the technology. And when you watch domestic league games across Africa, really, would we ever be able to, our leagues, afford that kind of technology? Some say the technology should either be right across the game or not involved at all. But others believe that for the top tournaments, it's relevant. So, and again, with technology, it always becomes cheaper. The longer it's used, the technology has become cheaper, becomes less expensive. So I think it will become more widespread. And I feel for the benefit of football to always move forward with the times and to use the technology that's available.
That's a very good question right there, Cletus, and thank you for that response, Ponga. A very interesting observation. Obviously, that has been one of the issues that has been raised. Let's go to my friend in Canada, Roger. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Nathan, and thank you for joining us.
Welcome.
Yeah. There is talk that the current investigation FIFA is going through is more than just soccer, it is maybe politics. Seth Blatter seemed to have stood up to the Western world. Is this the way it is being seen where you are in South Africa and the entire Africa? And what is that thinking? What effect is that thinking going to have as this case goes along?
Yes, I think the feeling here in the African continent, a lot of people tend to say that Sepp Blatter did a lot for Africa or has done a lot for Africa. He has given Africa more places at the World Cup. I think when he came into office, Africa was restricted to two or three places, and now we have five available places for African teams. People talk about the money that's pumped into the Gold Project. Initially, it started at $250,000 a year for each country. I think now it's at $400,000 a year. People look at the profit sharing from the World Cup and the previous World Cup in South Africa. Each member association, that time it was 204 members, received $500,000 per country. This Brazilian World Cup, each country has been given $1 million as part of the profit sharing from the World Cup. So the feeling in Africa is that Blatter was there for the African continent, and therefore you will find that when it comes to the vote, Africa was always prominent to support it. But I think you have to look at the bigger picture and probably ask yourselves, you know, this support came for political benefits because Blatter realized that the 54 African votes are generally what tipped the scale in terms of who's going to win the election or not. And we also have to look at the fact that there were a lot of underhand things happening, and the fact that Africa is a beneficiary or benefited from the presidency of Sepp Blatter, who needed the African vote, whether we should say we can accept some of those underhand things that were going because we happened to get some benefits when Blatter was in office. I personally feel that's a wrong approach. If something is wrong, it is wrong. It doesn't mean that because Africa got more places at the World Cup or because the Gold Project trickled into Africa that we can sit back and accept things that are wrong. Because at the end of the day, a wrong is a wrong. And even if football were run cleanly, I feel that it would even be more beneficial and more profitable and access to more funds than to accept, money that comes with conditions. Although it wasn't really stated that those were conditions, it was more to lure the African vote. Then you also spoke about the political side, whether in Europe and maybe the United States feel that because they haven't been getting the World Cup or because control of the World Game is away from them, I think the bigger picture here, we have to look at transparency, bringing transparency into sport. And I think when you look at the way the Americans run associations or the British or the Germans and the French, I think transparency is much more prominent in those associations than in some of the others. And they are accustomed to things being done at that level. If you want to open the books of UEFA, I mean, the salary of Sepp Blatter, for example, is a secret that has never been announced, and you could never do that in the United States or in some of the other countries. So I think the fact that there's a call for transparency, there's a call for openness, there's a call for better governance, there's a call for people to be able to understand where the money goes, how it is shared. I think so those are some of the positive things we should look at, and rather not turn this thing into not view this thing as a political battle between Europe and America versus the rest of the world. I think for the benefit of sport, and we did see it at the International Olympic Committee after the Salt Lake Olympics, where there was a lot of bribery, how IOC cleaned its house. And today there are very few question marks when it comes to International Olympic Committee activities. So IOC has been through this whole process that we are now talking about involving FIFA into, and they had no choice but to clean their house when officials were found to be taking bribes. And today, it's a much better organization. The National Olympic Committee benefit from resources from the IOC. Nobody suspects anybody of stealing. You know, there's less politicking. Nobody dishes out money for votes. So I think it's for the best interest of all to bring itself into the 21st century and run itself in a manner that is that people will look up to and say, look, this is our world game. It's run professionally. It's run with ethics. It's run with good governance. I think those are some of the positives that we hope will now be associated with FIFA, which unfortunately for the last 20, 30 years, we haven't been able to look at our game and say it's been run with honor and dignity.
Certainly, like you have rightly pointed out, 30 years, Ponga, is a long, long time. Why do you think it has taken America, who doesn't even care about football, to bring FIFA to its knees than the Europeans who have a much larger interest in it?
I think, looking at Europe, I think there was probably, you know, in other parts of the world, people felt that we can't rock this boat too much. We must try and bring change internally. We must, you know, gradually try to make adjustments to FIFA and you know, pass the baton in a more cleaner way. I think that's the way Europe approached this whole issue. But as you said, the Americans, you know, football is not a big thing for them. So they obviously don't feel that, you know, rocking the boat in football circles is anything too big for them. And obviously, some of the transactions passed through, especially those involving CONCACAF, which is your Central American and North American association. A lot of their activities passed through their banking system, passed through CONCACAF, which is headquartered in Miami. And they obviously felt that being on American soil, they had to take action, and they didn't hesitate to take the sternest action.
Ponga, what is the way forward for FIFA? Of course, they have to do an election, what do you call it, a by-election, whatever the terminology is, to elect a new president. How do you envision that process? And how does FIFA after Blatter look to you?
Yeah, I think, firstly, Blatter's days are over in football leadership. My worry is that, you know, it may go beyond his resignation. And at the age of 79, you don't really want somebody at that age to end up behind bars. But unfortunately, that is a distinct possibility if some of the revelations that continue to come out implicating in some of these matters. But going forward, I think we need, we talk as a football family, because football involves not only FIFA people, but it involves the teams, the players, the fans, largely the fans, billions of people who follow football. I think what people want is an organization that has openness and transparency, no more hiding how much people are getting and benefiting from football. People want an organization that conducts its affairs in a proper manner. People want an organization that is respectable across the world. People want leadership that is accountable. People want leadership that works for the benefit of the sport and not for their personal benefit. So we may see going forward some form of restructuring. I think the voting process has already been spoken about, in that rather than have 24 people who are going to be open to receiving money, who are going to be open to all sorts of temptations from the world of football, and maybe the executive committee, maybe the Congress of 209 nations should be the one to vote, because it's obviously not easy to bribe 209 different national associations or different people. It's much easier to fork out $1 million to 24 people than to 209 people. So I think we will see some changes in the voting structure. We will see some possible changes in the leadership, obviously,
yes,
in terms of personnel. But also, I mean, Sepp Blatter himself spoke about how in the executive committee of FIFA, those 24 members are people who are appointed by their national associations, and I mean by their continents, rather. So
mm-hmm.
He can't control who comes in, but he's forced to work with those people. And some of those, as we stated earlier, don't have the biggest levels of integrity. So maybe how the executive committee is structured may change going forward. And maybe whoever heads that executive committee will have a greater say in the people he works with, rather than have people just sent forward from the continent to work there with him.
Okay. Titus, let me allow you to ask. Please be brief. We've run out of time because I want Ponga to comment on his book and where people can buy it.
Good evening, Ponga. According to you, who do you think? Can you give us about 2-3 names that you can think of who can most suitable to take over this president?
Yes, I think, well, you know, the process will move forward, I think, in a few months' time, so it's difficult to pinpoint. But if you look at the people who are prominent right now and whose names are being spoken about, you would probably have to look at Prince Ali, who mustered a credible 73 votes against Sepp Blatter because nobody expected him to even get more than 10 votes. I think he's back in the hat for the potential leader for FIFA going forward. You have to look at Michel Platini, the president of UEFA, who has risen through football as a player, then as part of the World Cup in France, and then on to UEFA. I think he's probably a prominent person among the list of people who could take over. Then there are a few outside possibilities, like Jerome Champagne, who was the Deputy Secretary General of FIFA. He announced his name forward as one of the potential candidates. He was replaced just after the 2010 World Cup by Blatter. He was removed from his position, but he has good relations with Africa because he was involved in certain projects to bring football development. He's known in international circles and respected, but he doesn't really have a power base in football because he's no longer under any of the formal football structures. So I think those three are probably some of the candidates, but you can never rule out one or two people coming forward before we get to the stage where we will have new elections.
Excellent. Ponga, in the last few minutes remaining, I know we're going to set another show specifically for this. The book you have written, The Zambian Game, 4 Decades of Football. Just a brief synopsis. What do you cover? What do you talk about? And where can people get the book if they need a copy? We definitely need to buy this book, people.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk a little bit about the book. It really focuses from Zambian football from 1974, I would say 1971, when Zambia beat Zaire 2-1. And my late dad used to say that this was the start of Zambia's football revolution. So we sort of look at it from 1971, the defeat of Zaire, which is now Congo, because Zambia has never beaten them. In fact, a few years ago, Zambia had been beaten 10-0 in Congo. But Zambia then, in Dagamashot Stadium, produced a victory. Then we look at getting to the final of the Africa Cup of Nations. So we look at the evolution of Zambian football from the 70s right through the 80s, when the likes of Nkana were household champions in Zambia, when Power Dynamos was challenging for African titles. And then we go through the Olympic Games, and I'm speaking from a personal perspective. It's not a historical reference type book, but it's more my personal experiences going through these phases of my life, traveling to the African Cup of Nations in 1990 with the Zambian team, rising the individual players who were prominent at that time: Peter Kaumba, Godfrey Chitalu, Wisdom Chansa, etc. So we really look at all these people who have been prominent in Zambian football, the high moments, the low moments. We look at some of the issues around the stadium disasters we had when there were stampedes in Chingola, in the Independence Stadium in Lusaka. So I think it gives an overview of Zambian football, where we came from, why we succeeded in the 70s and 80s. And then, of course, everyone knows we had a period in the 90s when Zambia went down. And we look at some of those reasons. But then we were able to reemerge in 2012 and become African champions. And again, we did some things there to ensure that Zambian football got back on track. Finally, we look at whether we can contain or maintain that momentum going forward. And I think we are sort of hanging in the balance whether we will progress forward or whether we will retrogress, because certain things need to be done. So all that is covered in the book.
Excellent. We have like a minute or two here remaining.
the cover, that, how did you come up with that picture on the cover? I like it. Ashos Melu. Who are the other guys there?
Yes, Johnston Walia, Wisdom Chanter, and Larkin Siska. That photo was taken at the Olympics after Zambia had beaten Italy, because I then moved from the commentary position and I went to the dressing room to congratulate the Zambian team, and I happened to have my camera with me, so I took that picture personally. And it's one of the photos in my album that I keep very, very close, because that was probably, for me, the greatest time in Zambian football. The book is available on Amazon. You can download it if you have an iPad or any other tablet. We are looking to go to print probably at the end of June. We wanted to give the electronic version the opportunity to go right across the continent. But for the local readers in Zambia, the book will be available as a hard copy. And, of course, if anybody overseas wants the hard copy rather than to download it onto their iPads, they can also purchase the physical copy, the print copy.
Excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, Ponga Liwewe is a household name, and we consider him to be our sports or football analyst on this forum. What we shall do, Ponga, is when the hard copy come out, we shall have you back so that we can talk more about it. It's obviously, I prefer to do book interviews when I read the book myself. I'll make arrangements for that to happen. We shall have you here. Serena won?
Well, she has won. And when we had the technical problems, I watched the tennis, and she was able to take that last set. So I came onto the phone very happy. So she's the champion at Roland Garros, the French Open champion.
All right, excellent. Ponga Liwewe, ladies and gentlemen, giving us his analysis and views on FIFA after Sepp Blatter. Well, thank you, my friend, and greetings to the family. Say, Ma, tell Mom we say hi.
I definitely will. I'm in Johannesburg, but I will definitely give them a call in Lusaka and pass your greetings. And thank you very much for the opportunity to talk on the station, both about what's happening in world football and also about the book on Zambian football. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Ponga. Have a great weekend. Everybody, thanks for joining us. Next week, like Roger announced earlier on the forum, we're going to dedicate the whole segment to talking about our medical practitioners, particularly the nurses and the job and the work that they do. We do thank you for joining us. Follow us on Facebook, Zambia Block Talk Radio, and on Twitter, at Zambia Block Talk Radio. Have a good weekend.
Nako kuipirendi kuchitogo na mumu follow hamama inei jiziwanda zota nizi taeza talema na yuma pempelo atika pena siku lina azati kumbu kila oye chifu kwa lelo bantu bonse basoweza ulemu atate imwe Kale osangalala Zuba inga choki Talema na pepo Kapena mbale wanga Azazi wakuti akula Azazi otawa mavuto Alimumanja mwake Kapena zaziwa Kuti afuniko limba Chifukwa ni mwamuna Afuniko vuti kila banja Kuti ni bambo wa nyumba Hello, asatae wana Siunga ziwe, aza kusunga